You're listening to Bottom Shelf Bitcoin. This is episode 65. Hey everybody, welcome back to another episode of Bottom Shelf Bitcoin, the podcast that puts Bitcoin knowledge within everyone's reach. As always, I'm your host, Josh Humphrey, and today with me is Hoddleberry. Hoddleberry is the guy behind the recent Bitcoin banner that flew, and we're going to be talking about that as well as the cautionary tale of Liberty Dollars. So, Hoddleberry, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So, kind of give us your story a little bit, you know, background of you know, what is Bitcoin to you? Why does it matter to you? And then we'll get into the other stuff.
Yeah. So I got into Bitcoin. Actually, the first thing I've mentioned this to other people before, but the first thing I ever bought was Ethereum back in 2017, early in 2017. And I came into the space for money, you know, to get rich like everybody else. Heard about Bitcoin for a long time. You know, when it was up to $600, I thought I had missed the boat, like everybody does, you know, when they think about it. Actually, it's funny. I interviewed on a gun podcast I used to have Cody Wilson from Defense Distributed.
Oh, really?
You know, way back in, 2014, 2015, something like that. And I went back and listened to that interview, and I mentioned Bitcoin in that interview, but I never had owned it. So when I got into Bitcoin, I started playing the casino and then I made a bunch of money and then I lost a bunch of money with that. And then after I got wrecked pretty bad, actually, I started to understand the economics of it and what it was going to do for the world. So I was an economics major in college as an undergrad, and I had never heard the term Austrian economics until I had gotten out of college, which is kind of weird. I had professors from London School of Economics, from Wharton Business School, University of Pennsylvania, and I didn't understand it at all. After I started listening to people like Pierre Richard, Bitstein, Stefan Lavera, I read the Bitcoin Standard. I got to meet Saif Dean a few times, and I started to understand the economics behind it. That's when I went from just trying to make money to trying to change the world and have it be kind of a revolutionary thing and it was revolutionary in my own life personally, and I think it will be in the rest of the world, because I would say before Bitcoin, even though I knew a lot about economics, you know, traditional economics, I wasn't I didn't apply that to myself personally, whether it was my own finances or my own just outlook on life. I didn't save nearly as much as I should have. But once you kind of get the Bitcoin and you understand how it affects society and affects your own life, it really does change you in lots of ways. And so that's why I'm in it now.
Got it. Very cool. So were there specific things about Ethereum, or you were just in it?
I was just trying to make money.
I bought
Ethereum at $13 and then I sold it at $30, and I thought I was the smartest guy in the world, you know, and I was like, well, what's the next, you know, Litecoin, what's the next thing I can get my hands on? Gotcha. And stuff. And let me open up my Coinbase account and do all that type of stuff. But at this point now I only hold, Bitcoin. And you know, it's been about 2 years now that I've really been kind of a rabid, toxic maximalist person who, you know, has gone down that path.
Right. Yeah. The reason I ask is just because, you know, once in a while I'll see somebody who's pushing some, you know, someone who seems like they truly believe in this DeFi thing. Most people are not. Most people are just trying, we're coming off the crash of the yams debacle, but you know, most people seem to not care at all about the sound money or anything else. They They really are just in it to try and do the get rich thing. And so that's why it irritates me when, you know, all these alts try and present themselves as like some revolutionary world changing thing. And it's like, let's be honest, like none of your users care about that.
No, they right? don't. No, so. They don't. They care anyway. About tokens and price going up and things like that. And the nice, kind of like the nice thing about it is though, for those people who aren't investing in Bitcoin, when I say investing, I mean like, getting out of fiat, you know, cycling out of fiat money and kind of, it sounds trite, but like joining the monetary revolution, like those people are actually going to benefit from it, whether they like it or not, because when we have sound money, eventually once hyper Bitcoinization actually happens, doesn't matter really how much money you have. I think everybody's going to actually benefit, you know, secondarily from the new system, which lucky them.
Right. Well, yeah. So if you have, if we ever get to a point where really like all the other or majority of the other fiat currencies go away, right? Like then, and you're on a deflationary or, even stable currency, but that continues to increase in value per unit, then yeah, I mean, I think it just, you're always going to have those people who are not good with money, but the overwhelming majority of society, I think we'll have to kind of take a step back and really evaluate things. So yeah, it's that game theory kind of thing going.
Yeah. Awesome. Sorry.
No, you're good. So, hang on, sorry. My screen timed out. Okay. All right, so tell us about this Bitcoin banner. Like, what was it, and how did you get this idea and kind of, yeah. Yes. I guess give us an explainer on it.
So I'm in traditional, well, I'm in marketing. I do digital media, do a lot of Google pay-per-clicks, SEO, website development, and Facebook ads, things like that. And I like marketing. I've always been fascinated with commercials. When I was a kid, I memorized a lot of commercials and, you know, jingles and things like that. And I was thinking like, you know, what is something cool that the community can do to like rally around? And I just thought it'd be a fun thing to do. And it started off like, you know, I wonder if I could get enough people to raise enough money to do this. And so I floated out there, hey, you know, if we tried to do this, like, would anybody support it? A few people said they would. So at first I opened up a GoFundMe account, which was completely ridiculous and stupid. The reason why I wanted to do that was because I wanted to be able to give their money back if I wasn't able to raise enough funds for it. Because it would have been more difficult to track, you know, to give the Bitcoin back to the people who actually, you know, to this day, I have no idea who supported it other than if they told me on Twitter. But anyway, so I had the idea to put up one of those, you know, airplane banners that you might see at a sporting event or at the beach. And it said, want liberty, buy Bitcoin. And so I think I had about 81 different donations to the project, and people donated as little as 2 sats to, you know, like almost 1 million sats, actually. I think I raised about $525 worth. And so I was able to pay for it. I actually hired a videographer to take the video that you see on Twitter. And it was around the boardwalk in Ocean City, New Jersey, on July 4th at about 6:30 PM. And so a bunch of people, you know, on July 4th, you know, there's no fireworks or anything because of the virus. So
I thought, yeah, fireworks don't work if there's virus.
Yeah, exactly. You know, even though we're out, everybody's outside and, you know, far from each other, but that's beside the point, especially near a beach, right? Which is kind of
right.
But, so that went off and, my smallest donation was 2 sats, which I thought was amazing. Big shout out to DJ Booth 007 from Australia. He helped me set up the Tally coin. So I was able to accept on-chain transactions and Lightning transactions, which was awesome. And so, converted the money, paid the airplane banner company, paid the videographer, and voila, we had that. And I actually had an idea to do it like a Super Bowl commercial, but you know, they're like 5 million. So if there's anybody out there who wants to be generous and donate 5 million worth, you know, hit me up. But the purpose of that was just kind of like, I really wanted to see what a crowdsourcing thing could do if people were just altruistic and wanted to see some marketing out there that was community based and not corporate based. I mean, so on the back of the banner was a hashtag for LochaMesh, which is basically an open source software that from people from BTC Venezuela or BTC Venezuela. And that was kind of a freebie thing for them just to let, they didn't give me any money or anything. It was just for me to help them draw attention to their project, because part of the resiliency aspect of Bitcoin is being able to transmit it, not just over the internet, but over satellite. And they're doing things with radio. And that's why that was on there. But as far as like the Bitcoin marketing thing was concerned, I wanted to see, you know, how can we spread the gospel of Bitcoin just kind of organically? And a lot of times the message for a lot of people is, you know, invest your money and grow your money with Bitcoin. You see, you know, Grayscale Trust and some of these other companies, you know, I think Gemini has a lot of commercials or ads on like bus stops and things like that. But my focus was more like, are you interested in opting out of the system? Like, you're seeing everything crumble around you right now as far as the monetary system is concerned, inflation, we're just pumping money into the economy in the US. You need something else. And especially on July 4th, Independence Day in the US, getting people to equate Bitcoin with liberty, which is another topic I'm really passionate about. I thought it was just a fun project to do.
Yeah, absolutely. It's something I've been thinking about. I was talking to, I'm going to say his name wrong, but the guy from the Bitcoin Street Art project, where they, you know, have these, it's kind of a grassroots effort to get these stickers out in various places around the world and kind of, you know, guerrilla propaganda marketing kind of thing, which is great. But, you know, I was trying to think for the US, like, what is something, and you know, you're a marketing guy, maybe you've got a better way to explain this than me, but like, I want to present this idea that like, it's not, you know, it's not capitalists, it's not people who are financially responsible that are the source of your problems, right? It's this broken system that's, you know, that's feeding you this idea that like, somehow, you know, socialism is going to solve the issue for you. And it's not, you know, it's like, I don't know how to get that message across of, you know, concisely, that like, you know, like the financial system as it stands is oppressing you.
Yes.
By deflating away, you know, stealing your, basically stealing your life force by stealing your money and time,
your wealth,
inflation, you know, devalues the money that you hold, meaning that the hours that you spent at your job are now worth less than they were when you spent them in and exchanged those hours of your life away that you can never get back for dollars.
Right.
And now we've suddenly decided that those dollars are worth less. So I don't know how to, you know, say all that without doing that giant run on that I just did.
Yeah. And it's backwards, because as technology and as history marches forward, where we add more and more knowledge to humanity and we learn more, like really we should be in a deflationary system. You know, like there are certain things that have been deflationary. So like, I just saw a 42-inch TV for sale on like slickdeals.com or .net or whatever it is. For like $79. Like that's incredible. And that's deflation. That's a deflationary pressure because of the increase in technology, not because of the monetary system. And everybody just kind of expects that, like, hey, next year I want to get a raise. Next year I want to get a raise, or I should get a raise. But really, everybody should get a pay cut, because under a Bitcoin standard, you would have a system where the money is getting more and more valuable, and it should, in general, in the world, things should be getting cheaper and cheaper to produce because we have more and more human ingenuity and more understanding. We should be learning as a society and as a civilization how to do things better and better. And it should take us fewer and fewer hours to get the same work done that we did before. But it's backwards in people's minds. Everybody says, like, I should be getting paid more and more and more. Now, the only reason why anybody should get paid more and more and more is if your output goes up. And so the definition of greed is wanting more resources without an increase in input, or not an increase in output. Yeah. So greed is wanting more resources without an increase in output. And so when we should come to an understanding that most people are greedy, and that is that's a driving force economically, but it's also a negative force mentally and psychologically, and has a negative impact on society, where they're willing to, because they believe that they deserve things and they want things, whether or not they deserve them or not. They act in accordance with that impulse and with that incentive kind of model. And they do things like steal other people's stuff. And government's a perfect example of that. So, where were we going with that? But
I don't know. We were talking about the marketing. You know, like, ideally, if you had a sound money standard, whether it's Bitcoin or anything that doesn't, you know, continue to lose value, then it changes the way that people view things. We should be getting more productive. Items should be getting cheaper. And that's kind of what you were saying with the TV. You know, another thing is, like, phones, just electronics in general, tend to get cheaper over time because they don't have, and a lot of these things you look at that do continue to get more expensive, even though the technology is better and it should get cheaper. You look at phones get cheaper. You know, you can look at charts and look at the difference. It's like, do what?
The price of beef, for instance, it gets more and more expensive because, you know, we've pretty much reached max technology on producing beef. You can't grow a cow any faster, pretty much, for the most part. But like phones, you can make them cheaper and faster, and we can robotically do that. So we really see inflation in some of these items that are hard and difficult to produce, and they can't get really any better with increases in production technologies. But like one thing, the thing you asked me about earlier about like marketing and like kind of helping other people understand this, I think people are, at this point in time, actually starting to understand that. Like, they got a $1,200 check from the government in the US, and they're like, where did that money come from? Like, how did that, a person who's paying any kind of attention should understand that. Like, that's not normal. So when we're talking about like marketing and we're trying to convince other people, and marketing in Bitcoin is really not trying to make money off of other people. I mean, that's at least not the way that I'm talking about it. It's more like evangelism. It's you're trying to get other people to understand an economic reality and a system of a political system, and more than that, like a philosophical system of the way that things should be. And at this point in Bitcoin, I think people are starting to wake up from it, because I've had plenty of people talk to me and finally pull me aside, even though the price wasn't even necessarily going up too much. It was more like the value of the money is going down, man. We got to do something.
Right. Exactly. You know, it's like I got $1,200 out of nowhere, and it's not, and you know, even that was just, I mean, you want to talk about liberty, like, you know, My normal job works in a hospital. So I was, you know, always considered quote unquote essential. Right. But like, so many people could not go to work, and then they want to throw $1,200 and act like all pious and act like they, you know, were really contributing something, when that does not cover most people's expenses for the time that they were out of work.
Yeah,
and, You know, but then you look at, you know, so how much did they spend on giving to the people versus how much did they just print out of thin air for all their other garbage projects?
Yeah, well, the people closest to the money spigot will always benefit more than everybody else.
For sure.
So it's curious to me that everybody's been out of work for 4 to 5 months or whatever it's been, and yet the stock market is at an all-time high.
Makes no sense.
That makes like logical sense. If you were to say to somebody, hey, we're going to have massive unemployment, like it's going to spike to the highest number of new claims per day or per week, you know, in basically the history of the United States and in the world. I mean, everybody around the world. I mean, I just know my local context. If you were to say, what would you say is the impact on the economy? And you'd say, well, obviously it's terrible. People are not going to have money to pay for food. They're not going to have, they're not going to be able to make the rent. They're not going to be able to pay, you know, for basic necessities. No, the stock market will be literally at an all-time high from a numeric standpoint. And if you're looking at that and you're saying, I guess that's just the way things are, then you're not really using critical thinking to understand. I mean, like, if I can't convince somebody that that's not right, if that's not the way things ought to be, then we got a big problem. I mean, then I'll never convince you about Bitcoin.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You know, you're talking about, you know, Bitcoin evangelism. And I think there's this fine line where I think we've all done this where, you know, you alienate a friend or a coworker or a family member because you just keep trying to explain it to them. And it's like, why don't you just get this? And like, how much do we push this and try and help people see? And like, at what point do we just say, look, you know, here's what it is. If you want to know more, we can talk, you know, and walk away from that conversation. Like that's a hard line for me sometimes.
I'm a very optimistic person, and I want every single man, woman, and child to be like, you know, accepting the gospel of Bitcoin. But the people that I really care about are the people closest to me. And then once I get a rejection from them, or like not maybe like, well, that's interesting, but I'll consider it or whatever. Every once in a while, I wake up kind of metaphorically in a cold sweat and be like, they've got to get off zero. I have to try again. And I tried again with my mom last night, actually. And my mom said, oh, my dad's reading the little Bitcoin book right now, actually. But I just don't get it still. And that's I'm trying real hard to not be a jerk or not be like pushy or whatever. But I think my enthusiasm has won some people over, which has been great. And it's actually a really satisfying feeling when somebody says, like, okay, how do I do this? I say, okay, well, you know, how do you want to do it? Maybe just try Cash App, like just for the ease of use for the normie person. And we'll talk about, you know, self-custody later. But I think it's important if there are people that you care about. Like I feel so strongly about this that it's almost like the people that I care about that aren't doing it for themselves, it's like I just want to set aside X number of sats for them, like as a lifeboat or a life jacket for them. It's like, okay, you're not going to do what you're supposed to, what I think you should be doing. Like, let me just help you out here and do it. And, you know, 10, 20 years from now when they're poor, I can just pull out an open dime and say, like, here you go. This is for you. I thought about you back then because I was trying to take care of you. So if Bitcoin isn't bringing you to that point in your mind where you're wanting to take care of other people, whether it's your family or your friends, and you're just trying to like get the Lambo or whatever, in my opinion, you're doing Bitcoin wrong. And really, you're no different than any other altcoiner or person who's playing the casinos, you know, like with 100 times leverage. Like, I admitted, I think before at the beginning of this podcast, which is like, I came for the money. Like I wanted to make money. That was why I did it. But once I understood what was at stake, I don't even care about the money anymore. Like I want society to be better. And I'd be much more willing to save money and to build a business and to, you know, I feel like I'm not helpless anymore. I feel like there's a purpose to actually, you know, going to work. It's incredible.
I agree. Yeah, that was something that for me, like, because I kind of discovered Bitcoin and libertarianism around the same time, and then I kind of put Bitcoin to the side because I didn't understand it on a technological level at that point. I understood it enough to go, oh, this is cool, and then life got busy. And then as I got deeper into, you know, libertarian anarchy kind of stuff, there's kind of this I don't know if you want to call it desperation or depression. It wasn't like, you know, wasn't life-threatening depression. That's a very different thing. But it just, like, I guess just a sadness and a frustration, like, I don't feel like there's anything I can actually do to change this broken system. And then I kind of realized, like, oh, but Bitcoin kind of gives us hope in that, right? Like, to have this, you know, secondary parallel economy that we can actually make difference in. We can choose to either store value in a way that they can't take away from us, or you know, spend it on things that they can't tell us, no, you can't spend it on that.
Right. Yeah. So it's so funny because I grew up just kind of like right wing conservative in a conservative home, like Rush Limbaugh type of guy. I've been on the Rush Limbaugh program and on Glenn Beck's radio program twice. That's the kind of pedigree I had, like listening to Rush Limbaugh, like 8 years old, you know, that type of thing. I completely disavow, not completely, but I pretty much disavow the Republican Party at this point, even though I am currently registered as a Republican. So in college, and my college roommate was a libertarian and a Ron Paul kind of guy. More like a liberty guy than like a libertarian, as in like a card carrying member of the Libertarian Party.
And
so,
yeah.
So he was telling me about Sound Money. He said, you got to read the Creature from Jekyll Island, and you got to get on Sound Money train and start buying gold and silver and stuff like that. And, my buddy kind of became less libertarian and more Republican. And then I became more libertarian anarchist. I wouldn't consider myself an anarchist. I consider myself a minarchist. In a courts kind of way, but I mean, I'm open to anarchism, voluntarism and stuff like that. So it's funny. Before we started recording, we're talking about, you know, the Liberty Dollar, which was a failed attempt to create a parallel economy. Back in, I think it started in 1998 and it ran till about 2007. A guy named Bernard von Notthaus created something called the Liberty Dollar, where they had a mint, and the mint print made coins in gold and silver, specifically mostly silver. They kind of look like U.S. coins, and I'm holding one right here in my hand. It says Liberty USA, and on the back it says $20, and it says Liberty Dollar. It says trust in God instead of in God we trust. And it's 1 ounce of silver. My friend, the same friend, he gave it to me as a birthday gift. At the time, Bitcoin silver was worth about $20 or something like that. And I started getting into gold and silver because I was, you know, concerned about the impending collapse. I don't know if you remember a website called The Daily Reckoning. I'm not even sure if it exists anymore. It might still exist, and I might be just completely, like, I remember reading that and things like Zero Hedge and stuff like that. And concerned that we were coming for an impending doom monetarily, like, you know, federal debt was up to $1 or $2 trillion at the time, and maybe $3 or $4 trillion or something like that, and the debt clock was, you know, running out of you know, figures on the scoreboard there, decimal places. And I remember thinking, you know, like, if the dollar collapses, then we're going to have mass anarchy and chaos, and I should learn about prepping a little bit, and I should, you know, be storing gold and silver in my backyard and stuff like that. And then nothing happened. We had the 2008 collapse, and I think silver maybe made it up to $35 or $40 or something like that. Now it had dropped down significantly after that, and a little disillusioned with all that type of thing. And, still kind of just general Republican kind of guy at the time. And then I remember some events happened in the world where I just noticed that the government was just doing more and more crappy stuff to people, taking away liberty. And then I started getting into liberty and following people like Ron Paul and some other folks like that, and realizing that the state is not God. That's one of my favorite phrases. Even though the state tries to make itself as God and create its own laws and impose its will on other people and control their lives, which even as a Republican, I kind of believe that, but not to the extent that I believe it now. Getting back to the Liberty Dollar, they tried to create this parallel economy, and the government eventually shut it down. And what was supposed to happen in the Liberty Dollar movement was there was a website and you could go trade these coins for goods and services. And, you know, if you were a merchant or a service provider, you could set up yourself as somebody who accepted these. And the point was, if everybody started getting off the US dollar and onto gold and silver, onto sound hard money, then we could change, you know, we could make the government do what they're supposed to be doing and return to a gold standard or whatever. And that didn't happen. Instead, the government, I think it was the FBI or the Secret Service, said that his currency was too close to United States looking currency. They raided the warehouses. They shut the whole project down. And that was kind of like the end of the Liberty Dollar. And now they're just basically souvenirs, or you can melt it down for what it's worth in silver. And that was kind of eye-opening to me in a lot of ways, because it was just like this guy was basically nobody. There was maybe, you know, a few million dollars worth of Liberty coins out there in circulation, but it wasn't like it was any threat. And they just, with total ease and impunity, like they were just able to shut it down. I think some of the people who had their money seized actually got it back eventually, but you know, it was just kind of a little blip on the radar of history. And I'm thinking to myself, like, gold and silver is highly seizable and confiscatable. And that's the difference between Bitcoin and other forms of money. At this point, the surveillance mechanism that we have across the country, you know, like a government agent who's in California could go arrest somebody in Florida the same day. Whereas, you know, back in the 1850s and there was a gold rush and, you know, the people in the West, like it was like the Wild West. You had to have physical boots on the ground in order for you to arrest somebody. But now, you know, it's trivial for governments, central banks to look into somebody's bank account, see exactly, you know, what pack of gum they bought from what person, and, you know, shut them down because of whatever reason that they have for it. So enter Bitcoin, which came about, you know, almost right after the Liberty Dollar. And I don't think Satoshi ever mentioned that at all, but he did mention the bailout in the Genesis block. My personal belief is that Satoshi was not a libertarian.
And why do you say that?
Well, because, and so this is a personal theory. I think Satoshi was Hal Finney. And if you look at Hal Finney's writings previously, he wrote in such a way, like, I think, well, Satoshi said, for instance, Bitcoin would be amicable or like interesting to the libertarian way of thinking. Almost he's saying it like their way of thinking, like not my way of thinking, but like
right
outside of me kind of thinking. And if you look at some of Hal Finney's other writings, you see him write kind of similarly. So he wasn't like an anarchist kind of guy, but he was like a liberty kind of guy, and he very, very interested in cryptography and stuff like that, obviously. But like, I don't know, that's just a personal rabbit trail that I go down. And there's some plenty of other things that make me think that Hal Satoshi, but now we have the unconfiscatable nature of Bitcoin when it's properly stored, is kind of one of the missing links in liberty. You know, we can, and people like Hayek and Mises and even the guys who wrote The Sovereign Individual, They predicted this exact thing, as you can vote with your feet. You can just pull up roots, take your money with you. There's no exit tax. There's no nothing. And even if the government were to raid all the Bitcoiners in the world and steal, you know, like, you know, raid their, you know, their hardware wallets and things like that. As long as things were safely secured and backups were put in place the right way, the government could effectively get like no money from hardcore Bitcoiners. I mean, if they all did it right. And so the
government, they couldn't seize it. I mean,
they could put people in jail.
Yeah.
And they could put people in jail, and that would make it maybe unattractive for some people to use it. But if you have, but I think in this instance, kind of like with 3D printing, which is why I wanted to interview Cody Wilson, the horse is out of the barn. You know, like, there's really no going back. Like, once gunpowder was invented, like, there was no
right.
stopping this type of thing anymore. So I'm very excited, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess my point was more, you know, from the people who brought you Guantanamo Bay, I just, you know, it depends on how dark a scenario you want to go down, right? Like, best case scenario, right? Like, they can't, and they can't brute force it. So I agree with you there, 100%. They're not going to just brute force your seed words, not likely, and they're definitely not going to do it on hundreds or thousands of Bitcoiners. I am skeptical that they would not, you know, use any kind of intimidation or threats on people. They would definitely seize any fiat assets you have or job stuff. But at the same time, you know, and I was having this conversation with someone the other day, and they said, okay, but if they start doing this, does that not, you know, especially if they're trying to seize it to hold in reserves, doesn't that,
it validates it.
Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. You know, it validates it, and it actually drives the number up even higher.
Yeah. If the government, things that the government doesn't want you to have, like, that's the reason why you should have it. Like, that's why I'm such a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. I had a gun podcast. And I'm not even that big of a gun guy. Like, I own guns, but I'm not. There are like real big gun tech heads, you know, who are into guns, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But my podcast partner, he was the tech head, and he was a libertarian kind of guy. I got into liberty and loved it from kind of the philosophical, you know, ethical, legal perspective. And I think a lot of the, and I mean, this is a good reason why a lot of Bitcoiners are gun people, because they believe in self-sovereignty, you know, creating your own destiny and being a person who's not a slave. So I totally agree. I think the government should, and if they were acting in their own self-interest as a single solitary cohesive, they would shut it down as soon as possible. Like they would try actively to subvert it, to attack the network, to attack people who are holding it and transacting in it. And that may be on the horizon, but I take great comfort in the fact that the government is very slow and stupid in a lot of ways. Like the military seems to be pretty good at what they do, you know, on par as far as, you know, droning people and going into building and, like, you know, the SWAT team kind of aspect of the military. But as far as like the bureaucracy in coming up with the concept that we were going to shut down various individual people, I think it's extremely unlikely that they'll be able to get their act together in doing that and kind of coming up with a cohesive plan to do it before it's too late. And once it starts happening, you're right. Like, it does validate the use case for it. And then once that happens, I think the floodgates kind of open. But you know, it's funny because I think this pandemic is actually going to do more for Bitcoin than we realize, because you know, while everybody's sitting at home doing nothing, you know, in a quarter of the total monetary supply in the United States is being just literally handed out to people who are doing for no reason. People are going to start asking questions. And if, like, you know, when inflation was going on at, you know, supposedly 2% a year, we're going on very slowly from, you know, maybe the year 1917, 1913, whatever, to today. As long as it was low and manageable, you know, we were boiling the frog very slowly. People were okay with it. You know, people aren't good at statistics naturally, so that they think that, like, oh, if I get a raise next year, that's a good thing. But they don't realize that their purchasing power goes down, and that's a bad thing. So as long as it goes slow, it was fine. But I mean, when I'm going to the supermarket, and I remember I was able to buy maybe 10 years ago ground beef for $2.50 on sale, maybe, or $2 on sale, maybe $3, till now it's like $4.50, $5, $6. That type of thing hits people pretty hard. And I think when you turn up the volume or turn up the heat a little bit too fast, that it's like the straw that breaks the camel's back. Like, they flew too close to the sun, they tried to get too greedy, and now all of a sudden you have, like, an untenable situation for them. And I feel like the dam could break at any moment, at any time. That's the way I feel right now. I felt that way back at the end of 2017 when we had the big run up. I was like, oh, this is the big one. Let me dump all my money into Bitcoin. You know, like any last little dollar I had in my bank account. But that wasn't it. And looking back on it, I understand the reasons why that wasn't it. It was a liquidity problem. But now it's more like a real economic crisis problem. And so any time I think we could see hyper-Bitcoinization.
Yeah. You know, you were talking about, you know, making an attack if they understood it, if they were cohesive. I think, you know, two things that stand out in my mind as times when I think they have attempted was, you know, I think Gavin going to talk to the CIA about it, probably. Well, you know, and then afterwards, but the kind of decentralized, and not just in the nodes, but in the development, you know, the control of the code base, nature of it helped protect us. And then I also think, I think that's what Ross was. I think it was an attempt to squash these ideals in the same way that, you know, what happened to Liberty Dollars. But, you know, like we said, I think it kind of validated, and the fact, you know, of course, that, like, after the whole thing came out, that, like, you know, these agents that were working this operation were corrupt, they were stealing the money for themselves and everything, you know, I think it validated Bitcoin's use case.
Yeah. So, okay. So if they were stealing the money and they had, like, a personal vendetta, or incentive to take the money for themselves and stuff like that, then that might tell me that it wasn't as much of a coordinated effort, like a deep state kind of we're protecting. I think it was more like, we don't want people to operate outside the mainstream, you know, selling drugs and thinking that they can do that. And we're going to make an example of him because of the drugs thing, more than it was a monetary thing. Like, I don't.
Oh, yeah. I agree.
So, I mean, it could have been a little bit of both. Because obviously the sentence that he got had nothing to do with, like, you know, you create a website, and, like, the whole murder for hire thing shouldn't have even been part of the conversation, but.
Right. Yeah, I mean, she specifically cited his political ideology in the sentencing.
Right. Which obviously is bull. But yeah, you're right. Like, they made an example. It's possible that they can make another example of somebody, whether it's real or imagined. I think that that's total possibility. But like I said, I think the government is not efficient and effective enough to do this. And it's possible that people at the top are actually getting into Bitcoin themselves and you know, using it, using like this time of it's an asymmetry of information right now, using it for their own personal gain. And I think that, you know, like when Rome collapsed, people at the top, I'm sure, didn't believe that it was going to collapse. Like, they believed that things have always moved on as they have been. Like, they don't, like, think about it. So I'm 37, and so I was born in 1983, and I remember hearing about communism and how bad it was. And I remember hearing about, you know, the fall of the Berlin Wall and things like that. But I didn't live through it, you know, growing up in the Northeast, you know, in the United States. And people who now are in the prime of their careers, that they're 37, 45, 50, they have not lived under a terrible, like, they believe, I think, that the U.S. hegemony on the dollar is just like divine right. It's just like, this is the way things are. We won 2 world wars, you know, USA all the way. And they don't think that it's possible for something bad to happen. So they probably, you know, when you're the king, you feel like you're insulated against attack, and they see Bitcoin, probably many people see Bitcoin as something a bunch of idiots are doing. But I doubt that many people at the top are taking it very seriously, which is good for me because I get a chance to stack in the meantime.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. You know, the longer they go without making any move on it, the you know, the less likely I think that they have any real success in stopping it.
Yeah, I got a real life buddy who's a Bitcoiner. He's on Twitter, and he's a big Bitcoiner. But I know he says when the price goes down, I start celebrating and stuff like that, and he gets mad at me. I think, like, legitimately, like, he's like actually mad at me, and I'm like, no, you don't understand. I don't have enough yet. Like, I'm not joking. When I see the price go down, I'm very, very happy, because I think it's still going to work, but I think just the market is just inefficient in pricing it in right now. So yeah, I want more time. I really want more time. 'Cause like I mentioned earlier, during 2017, I made a lot of bad financial decisions. Like, even being what I would consider someone who's relatively intelligent as far as monetary things are concerned, like money is concerned. Like I said, I was an economics major. I think about that type of thing. I've always been kind of entrepreneurial. You know, I took accounting classes and things like that. My personal life habits were not in accordance with my knowledge. And so therefore, I should be much further along as far as stacking is concerned, as far as my personal finances are concerned, and I'm not. And that's a source of stress for me, that I have all this information but not enough capital to do anything with it. So do you
in your marketing, do you have anyone that pays you in Bitcoin?
I've never been paid in Bitcoin. And I've paid other Bitcoiners in US dollars, but I have not paid them. I've advertised with a well-known Bitcoiner before, done some marketing work, and I paid them as an influencer in US dollars instead of Bitcoin, which is kind of funny to me. But the only Bitcoin that I've earned was in that fundraiser, really. And here's a confession for the group. I never cashed it. I just paid the cash out of my own pocket and just pretended like it was like I had just bought that amount of money worth of Bitcoin. Yeah. That's like one way to actually get un-KYC Bitcoin. Well, I mean, but I mean, seriously though, if
well, it's not like if it was an even exchange of a value at the time at that exchange rate, which I assume is what you mean, then there's nothing wrong. It's not fraud.
I lost money. Like I put out more money. I put out more money than I got in Bitcoin at the time. I think since then I probably have made money on that Bitcoin, but at the time, like when I made the payments, I paid out every single cent worth of what I got in donation. And then I made my own donation as well. So I lost money on the transaction, not even including my time, obviously, but, yeah. So, but that, now I'm thinking about it, maybe I should start doing fundraisers, lots of fundraisers. And then that's my way to get KYC free Bitcoin.
There you go.
It's just like, you know, raise money for somebody and, you know, somebody's legal fees, and they just pay them out of my own pocket.
Yeah. How do we, you know, I guess this is your conversations I've been having lately of like, you know, we talk about hyper Bitcoinization and for sure, I think that there is a point where, you know, if the government just continues printing away its value of the fiat currencies, then, you know, it truthfully, it's not so much that the value of Bitcoin goes up, right? It's like the value of the fiat just crashes away. But in terms of purchasing power, I mean, but, you know, I think I also, to some extent, am impatient for that. And like, how do we bring about, you know, circular economy when everyone's, you know, how do we have that parallel economy, that thing that was the ideal, right? Even for the Liberty dollars, when nobody wants to spend it.
So I think Lightning is a big part of that. I think it has to be, because on-chain transaction is not gonna, it's not going to cut it, especially when fees are up. If you have small transactions in Lightning, I think that would be really, really helpful, especially if like something like Cash App, and I heard Venmo, you know, they're going to be getting into Bitcoin, supposedly. If PayPal gets into Bitcoin, like PayPal proper, because I think they own Venmo, but
yeah,
if PayPal proper gets into it, or if eBay starts accepting it, I think that'd be really great. Amazon, I doubt, is ever going to do that type of thing. I think we still have a way to go as far as some of the usability of payments and stuff. Cause I'm like, as far as on a hardcore Bitcoiner scale, I would probably say I'm like a 7 or 8 out of 10, probably 7 out of 10. And like, you know, grandma is like 1. So like, you know, I have lots of different types of wallets. I have lots of different types of like implementations of, you know, like I would consider like Jameson Lopp is like 10, you know, like he erased himself off the face of the earth, you know, from an identity standpoint. There's like that guy. I'm not that far away, but even for me, when I'm trying to do certain things, it can be an annoyance. It's like extra steps and not as seamless as it could be. Some things have gotten really, really good. It's really easy for me to send money from Cash App to my wallet, to self-custody. Like that's super easy. but though to get paid in Lightning, if you're not running your own Lightning node, which I'm not currently, because there's a reason, but I won't mention why, but I will be soon. If you're not running your own Lightning node and I got a bunch of Lightning donations from the Bitcoin banner, it's hard to rotate that back into BTC or to money with, you know, like you got to go through a regular kind of payment channel. I think I used Async to rotate some of that Lightning out, but like it's an extra step, and like nobody wants extra steps. They just want like, you know, they want to swipe the credit card and then that's it. So how do we get to that point? I'm not sure how we get there yet, but I think Lightning's a big part of that, to answer your question.
So let me ask you this. How, Well, you said you don't run your own Lightning node. How much of your, do you remember how much of your donations were in Lightning?
Probably, if you wait a second, I can tell you.
Okay. Because I've used Lightning a few times, right? But it feels like, and I don't want to speak ill of devs or anybody, because obviously it's hard work that they're putting together, and I think at some point it will be there. But I think most of what it's used for is kind of gimmicky stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like buying some stickers and buying some t-shirts. And that's fun for sure. And like, I don't want to tell people not to do that by any means, you know, but like it's, and I think it is good for small transactions because the fee thing is a real deal. But you know, you also can just set it on, you know, depending on what, if you're using a good wallet, you can just set it on one sat per byte and just wait the time out.
Right. Yeah. I was talking to my mother last night about Bitcoin and where we are right now and trying to relay it to like the internet. Like we're in the internet. Bitcoin right now is the internet back in the 80s. Like people who used the internet and who were computer guys, there were no women. It was, I mean, very few women. But it was like, you know, got you know, your stereotypical guys living in their parents' basement with glasses and, you know, just weirdo Dungeons and Dragons kind of guys. Stereotype. So all those guys were doing physical meetups to use like the internet, you know, and do computer stuff. And they were swapping programs on floppy disks and stuff at meetups and stuff. Like that's where we're at right now. Like, can you imagine like a meetup for gold or a meetup for like the US dollar or like for the euro? Like that doesn't happen because it just is money. And we're going to get to the point. And right now, like you don't have internet meetups in the sense that like we're internet enthusiasts or we're compute, like there are dev meetups, but it's usually around particular projects, not like the internet in general. So I don't think, so someday we'll have no more internet or no more Bitcoin meetups because Bitcoin will just be money. So right now I feel like we're in the 80s. Where it was very difficult to get on the internet. Like I remember when I first got the internet, which was 1995 or 1996, and it was AOL. There were people who didn't know how to get on the internet. Like they didn't know what it was or what it was used for. They thought it was just for like chat or, you know, checking. It was like, you can check stock quotes. You can chat with your friends, you know? And that's where we're at now with Bitcoin and some of these developers. Like, you know, there's like the Satoshi's place. You know, you can pay some Lightning Sats and graffiti a digital wall. You know, but that's not going to get my mom to buy Bitcoin.
Yeah, for sure.
My mom is only going to use Bitcoin when she can swipe a credit card or a debit card,
yeah.
And yeah, that'd be it.
Yeah, I think it's one of those, like, you know, the getting the merchants, Stephen Cole was on Stefan Lavera recently, and I think he said it really well. It's like, it's going to start taking off when you have small merchants who want Bitcoin themselves.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when they have a use for it, then they will accept Bitcoin and even might offer a discount for Bitcoin, right? So that's how they can acquire Bitcoin. And I think that's what we've got to wait for, because people can accept it if they want right now, but there is not enough incentive to make that hurdle, to solve that pain point of getting converted over to accept it, right? Like BTC Pay is not that hard on an iPad.
Right.
But it's the hurdle of, you know, if they don't have a use for it, if they don't want to hold it, and if they don't see a use case for it, then they're not going to do it. And then they're going to go through all this effort, and then they're just going to try and convert it back to fiat. And it's kind of wasteful right. in that sense.
So that's the debate that I'm interested in, is people say like, well, you know, Bitcoin is like gold and you don't transact with gold, but gold is money and gold is as good as money. And technically dollars are supposed to be backed by gold. So in the same way, people will have like Bitcoin banks and people use credit cards with Satoshis in them, and it'll be custodial. And if you want to be self-custodial, you still can, but it will be more of like a base layer type of thing. And which may be true. I'm not sure, but then that's a whole another financial rail. That's not Lightning. That's not on chain. That's like, excuse me. That's like additional payment kind of system. Cause that's like a traditional bank account that just happens to be denominated in sats. And that doesn't exist right now. Like that type of thing doesn't exist. So you have merchants that accept on-chain Bitcoin. You have merchants that accept Lightning. You know, very few and far between. And you're right, most of them are merch related, like Bitcoin swag and stuff like that. And then, but you don't have the Visa of Bitcoin. Like you don't have credit card with just regular bank account. And I think you're going to need that. In some way, like there are people that use like that run command prompt, like they use command prompt, you know, coding and running their machine, like Linux machines and stuff like that. But like the vast majority of people fire up their iPhone or, you know, their laptop out of the box and they just do what's there, and they're never going to do that. So once we get past a couple more iterations and the price will drive some of this development, and it already has, I believe. And I think slowly but surely you're seeing new developers come in. You're getting people who weren't developers that actually became developers because they were interested in Bitcoin, which is another way that Bitcoin changes people's lives by changing their behaviors because they see some hope in the future. But yeah, sorry for rambling.
No, you're good. You're good. I was,
by the way,
enjoying this too.
So I looked at my Tally coin, a fundraiser dashboard, and I had 59% Lightning and 41% on chain. And then I had two GoFundMe contributions of $10 each, for which I received like $14 or something like that. Maybe it's like 15. They took like a...
What? Like GoFundMe took a cut?
Yeah, GoFundMe took a cut. And then like the payment processing fee.
Jeez.
When I rotated the Lightning sats out of Tallycoin, I used Async, which was just took a 1% cut, I think. Otherwise I'd have to like move it to Blue Wallet, and then there's a payment thing. Cause I mean, I wasn't just going to like sit there and store, you know, $300 worth of Lightning sats, like, you know, Blue Wallet. Like I just didn't feel like doing that.
Yeah.
I wanted those sats in cold storage, man.
So that's actually a pretty high percentage of Lightning. That's more than I would have thought. You know, my feelers have been that Lightning use is not that high. But that's more than what I expected. So that's interesting.
I'm trying to figure out, like, so from a marketing perspective, what can we do to, like, what would be, like, if a merchant that had something that was, like, really awesome only accepted Lightning, then you might get some more adoption because you would get, like, people rotating into it in order to do it, you know?
Yeah.
I hope, and so
this is kind of the thing with Bitcoin in general, and maybe this is, you know, what you've got to start with on Bitcoin, but I think this is something that pushes Bitcoin adoption. If you look at the 3D, the 3D printed gun community is a great example of this. You know, when they, Deterrence Dispensed came up with the 3D printed Glock, you know, the reliable version, the rail, the rails, the first version was like, do it yourself. Right. And then the first person to get them produced was selling them only for Bitcoin, you know, nice. Anonymous, website and, you know, Spooky Rails. and I still believe they only take Bitcoin. And so, you know, it's things like that, that kind of force someone who goes, hey, I like that thing. Okay. Now how do I get Bitcoin in order to get that thing? Which also drives, and this is where like, I don't want to bring people in just for the, like the number go up thing. But in some ways there's a certain inseparability, like you cannot entirely separate the censorship resistant payments from the number go up thing, because, you know, if you have a money that can be used for censorship resistant payments, you know, that in itself drives demand to some extent.
Yeah. Which is, I mean, Silk Road really did a good job of, like, people, a lot of people, I mean, I've heard many stories about people who got into Bitcoin because they wanted to buy drugs, and then they maybe got their life together or whatever, and then they just became a Bitcoiner, or maybe they're still into drugs, but they're still a Bitcoiner, whatever. So I mean, that was a good use case for it. Other illicit things, like, so possibly gambling, although I don't feel like we've seen too much gambling adoption. Probably because the alt casinos are themselves gambling, like, you know, that's a form of gambling. And now gambling has become more legal. You know, remember when you had DraftKings, you see this commercial for DraftKings and you could like put money in there and you could win, you know, because you picked like the teams that were going to do the best or whatever. And it was more like fantasy football or, you know, fantasy sports. But now it's just like DraftKings is now just outright gambling on the games themselves. And like now once you've got that, there's really no reason for Bitcoin to exist. So, I mean, there's no reason for Bitcoin, for someone to get into Bitcoin to like take their money and do online gambling. It's just there's fiat for that. I think so. What Lightning can do, potentially, like this is just a theory, Lightning could enable some really cool stuff with like micropayments, and I'm sure plenty of people talked about that. But things like, instead of a music producer producing, you know, putting their stuff on Spotify or Apple Music or whatever, like, because Apple Music's going to take a huge chunk or whatever, but they could, if there was like a music service that did, that paid in sats, artists, I think, would flock to it. I really do. Because if you pay, if you want to buy something for $1 or 50 cents, or if you're selling something for $1 or 50 cents, Visa is going to take half that money, if not almost all of it, because there's like a minimum charge. But if you're doing it with like micropayments globally, people would probably be willing to pay to work things out that way. Or at least I would, anyway. I would love to move off of Apple Music and then have the artist, you know, get more of their money.
Okay. Right. And you know, if you had that kind of use case where, and this is the thing that I feel like we were promised and I just haven't seen come to fruition yet. And I know that's kind of, there's a certain amount of selfishness right there of like demanding developers do things when I'm not capable of doing it myself. But this idea of streaming payments, right? That you don't even have to necessarily have, I mean, obviously from a end user perspective, there's a convenience of just going to one website, right? To get, you know, go to SoundCloud or whatever to get all the music. But The other thing is that each artist can host that themselves, right? And so there is nobody who gets a cut. I am not a Taylor Swift fan, but I find the whole issue with, like, as a teenager signing a contract and then having these other people who have the rights to all of your music.
Oh, it's terrible.
You know, for the end of, till the end of time, it's an interesting, you know, it's a predatory business practice, but, you know, and then the idea of now she's, you know, talking about going back and re-recording all of her original songs. That's so amazing. That she has the rights to those, recordings, you know? And so you prevent that kind of thing if they're taking the money themselves and they're never going through Spotify or whoever.
That is, like, her doing that, even though I disagree with her politics a lot, and it's possible that she's just a crazy person. I mean, honestly, I have no idea, but that is an amazing thing to me to say, like, I'm going to re-record all, like, that talk about self-sovereignty. Like, she wants nobody else to have the right to her own stuff. You get a couple artists, maybe, like, you know, Kanye or Taylor Swift, not to put those two back together, but
I'm gonna let you finish,
or like some other artist. And I mean, you are seeing some famous people like Russell Okung from the Seattle Seahawks. You're seeing, you know, the Winklevies, even though they're into, you know, the altcoin casino stuff. But there are people out there that are putting out content that would possibly be interested in doing stuff like this. And I think if we made enough noise with it, I think it'd be possible. I mean, so, like, this conversation right now, honestly, Josh, is making me want to just put out a product that I'm only going to accept Bitcoin for. Like, it actually is, because it's like, I want to have a way to get sats and to be, like, outside of the system. Like, even if it's not extremely profitable, I just want it for my own project.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, back to the thing, like what Steven was saying is, you know, I think offering a discount for your normal, just, you know, on your website or whatever, when you send a, you know, like a quote to a customer, it's just like, here's what the total is. Here's the price if you pay in Bitcoin, you know, and even if they don't, right. But it gets them thinking,
right.
Like, why would you take a discount for me to pay you with that?
Well, there is actual reason. I mean, there is actual reason to accept a discount, because, I mean, I've done a lot of business with contractors and stuff where, you know, they'll tell you, like, well, I'll give you the senior discount. And I'm like, what are you talking about? It's like, you know, seniors usually pay in cash. They're like, Right. Yeah. So you pay in cash. You know, cash price is one thing, because it goes off the books, and contractors are famous for that. So, like, so number one, payment processing fees is 3%. I had a contractor come out the other day and said, if you pay me in cash or credit card, I'll take 3% off because the contractor fee, not because of the tax thing, but because of just the payment processing fee. So 3% payment processing, and then tax stuff. And also, one of the things that I've been learning as, like, I grow in my career and I make more money, the value of being under a particular threshold for taxes in general, like, even if it's not like because you're paying the higher rate on that money, but it's just like you want stimulus money. If you're married, you got to make under $150,000. And that's not necessarily a reason to make under $150,000, but like I want to make as little money as possible that the government knows about. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want them having any more money. The reason why Bitcoin has to exist is because of them. So, you know, if you had a 10%, 10 to 15% discount for Bitcoin specific purchases, I think would be it seems like a no brainer to me. And by the way, like, one other thing that I have found out is, like, even if you're an, you know, quote unquote honest person and you're paying your taxes, I had a buddy who was making a bunch of money on eBay. He maybe made, like, you know, $10,000 on eBay. It was a side hustle for him or whatever, but he reported all the income on eBay, and then he got audited because of the eBay stuff. Like, he said, I reported every single dollar that I made on eBay, but they still audited me. It's like the fact that you did it right, like nobody else would have reported $10,000 on eBay unless they had to, you know, unless they felt like they had to do that, because people, you know, buy and sell stuff all the time. Like they bought a bike and now they're selling it or something. But like, I think the incentive is there. I just don't think people have woken up to the need for it, or maybe they're just lazy. I don't know.
I think it's a mix, but yeah.
But the problem is selling your services to people who want. There's two problems: finding a person who has Bitcoin, who already knows how to pay you in Bitcoin. So that's a difficulty. But then right. Out of that subset of people, there are people who don't want to part with their money, or they don't want to part with their sats, because it's actually like holding sats has actually affected people's brains now. So that it's like, I don't want to let go of this I can always make more cash, but this is a finite number of sats that will never come back to me ever again. Or, you know, in 6 months, it could be worth, you know, 50% more. I'm giving you my crappy money. I'm not giving you the good money.
Right, right. And that's what happens. And that's why the like, you know, people act like they'll hold forever and they'll never sell. And that I just call BS on that, because everyone's going to have a price. Like, we have to be honest with ourselves. Everyone's got a price that they want to sell at. I get people who say, I'm never going to sell it back for US dollars. Okay, that's fine. But you will trade it for goods and services.
Right.
Exactly. And there's a purchasing power at which it becomes too difficult to resist. And so, I think we need to, you know, create those goods and services that people want, and then either offering the discount, which again, people may or may not take advantage of, but it makes them start thinking about it. And then, or offer it, you know, something exclusive that's only for Bitcoin.
Like Bitcoin is money. Like we need to remember that as Bitcoiners. Bitcoin is money. Like, that's what it is.
Yeah.
So this is not like Smaug, you know, hoarding gold under the castle or under the mountain, you know, in The Hobbit. You know, like there is a purpose for money, and purpose of money is to buy things and to trade it for goods and services. So, I mean, I totally get that. And my screen name is Hoddleberry, obviously. And I love Bitstein. You know, he does his whole spiel about, you know, never selling ever for any, you know, that type of thing. But, you know, we all know that you're in it for the money, and money is to be used. Like, there's no purpose of holding money forever just for holding it.
Well, but even he has said, you know, that like, look, if moon for you, if your personal moon is like just getting the Lambo, good for you. Like, he's not going to tell someone, you know,
right. But
you shouldn't, but just know, you know, I think his whole thing is like, yeah, but for me, I've got a stable enough situation that I don't need to spend it right now.
Right. And what it does is it, like we're talking about before, like it shapes your thinking on money, and it shapes who you are as a person. Like, do you really need to be spending money on this right now? Like, can you make coffee at home? Can you do whatever to not waste money? And I was terrible with money before. In 2017, I got into a lot of trouble, even though I was making good money. Because it's not really about how much money you make. It's about how you spend your money, how you allocate things. A bunch of things happened at the same time. Most of them, some of them, a couple of them were bad luck. And most of it was my own fault. And had I been more attuned to like what the purpose of money was and my philosophy on it, those things wouldn't have happened. So the last like 3 years have been a huge education in my life, and now my life is now aligned with what my philosophical, what I thought my philosophy of life was, you know. Like Bitcoin snapped those two things in alignment. Whereas before, I thought I knew a lot about money. I thought I knew a lot about personal responsibility and such, you know, this and that. But I was not walking that walk at all until Bitcoin came along.
Yeah. And that, well, and that, so that, that, that kind of, you know, practice what you preach, or, you know, there's lots of different ways of phrasing that, but you know, that kind of lines up with your, I don't know if you wanted to talk about your kind of upcoming project that you're
Yeah, sure.
working towards?
Yeah. So, my next project, I mentioned before, I had a gun podcast, gun related, gun and liberty. And it was related to guns and, theology. Most people know, I guess, from Twitter and stuff that, you know, I'm a religious guy. I'm a Christian. And, so my new project is going to be called Faith Over Fiat, and it examines Bitcoin, and faith and belief, and how people of various faiths, whether they're Christian or Muslim or Jewish, or I have militant atheists coming up on the podcast, and how their personal belief and philosophy and ethics shapes their view of Bitcoin and what it means for them, and why they're in the space, and why they believe it's going to change the world. And so I think, you know, there's a lot of different Bitcoin in Austrian economics, and there's Bitcoin in technology, and there's Bitcoin in, you know, space aliens and stuff, you know, and, you know, Josh, your podcast is great too, and has a lot of different perspectives, but I want to focus specifically on one little slice, not talking about the tech, not talking about, the politics, but talking about like personal belief and what Bitcoin means to you from a religious or personal philosophy or ethical standpoint. I think it's going to be an interesting, kind of get to know some Bitcoiners a little bit more personally. So hopefully people will like it.
Yeah, that sounds cool. All right, man. Well, we're at like an hour and 20 here, so we should probably wrap up. Because I know you're an hour ahead of me anyway. So, any parting thoughts, and how can we keep up with you?
I think my only parting thought is that, I think it's important for Bitcoiners to stay grounded, to not be attached to money, even though all we do is think about money all day long. If you're like a hardcore Bitcoiner on Twitter. But just kind of be cognizant of the love of money and not let that control you. So I'll leave you with that. If you want to find me on Twitter, I'm Hoddleberry. It's kind of like, you know, I'm your Huckleberry, but Hoddleberry from, you know, the great movie Tombstone, Doc Holliday. But yeah, thanks, Josh, for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. So we'll look forward to hearing when you start your new podcast. And thanks for your time and coming on. And I think we, you know, need to keep these things in mind and appreciate Bitcoin for what it is, and knowing the history and examples of things that have, you know, the like Executive Order 6102, yeah, and the Liberty Dollar things, and like there are real threats, and this is why it matters that, you know, you self custody and you do these things so that you that your wealth cannot be stolen, whether, you know, physically stolen or stolen away through inflation. So thanks, man, for coming on.
Sure. Keep up the good work. Talk to you later.
All right, bye. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Remember to follow Hoddleberry on Twitter, and follow me on Twitter as well, at BottomShelfBTC. Subscribe to the show so you don't miss any future episodes, and share it out and annoy all of your friends and family so that they have to hear it as well. All right, I hope you guys enjoyed this one, and I am working on a few more. Sorry, this is taking a little while to get out, but, you know, as the semester picks back up, life gets busy again, so episodes may be kind of sporadic, but that's the way it is. Anyway, for Bottom Shelf Bitcoin, I'm Josh Humphrey. Thanks for listening.